Chapter 16. Slow, slow, like a belly slit worm struggling through a rut slow. Ray Sloane walks alongside a massive platform. A stage, really. A dais on rusted hover rails, chugging and buzzing. It's drawn forward by hut slaves, pulling on fat chains draped over their bony shoulders. On the stage sits Nima the Hutt, coiled in a nest of ratty pillows under a massive leather tent. The Hutt sleeps, snorting and snoring, bubbles of mucus burping up through her nose slits. The occasional wind comes and tossles the filthy red ribbons tied around her many nodules and protuberances. This is the rear of the caravan. But the stage and its riders are far from the sum of it. Ahead walk dozens of hut slaves. Others ride wheel bikes or old speeders, whose grav lifts have broken and are now mounted atop rolling platforms. Their engines converted from clean turbines to growling, smoke-belching locomotives. Some ride leathery reptilian beasts, whose bodies are fitted with metal plates and crude bionetic enhancements, like telescoping eyes or pneumatic jaws. All of it churns and trundles along through a sun-scoured, wind-whipped valley. And on each side of them stand spires of red stone and anvil-shaped plateaus, like the guardians of a forbidden place. Those plateaus cast long shadows across this deep valley. "This is arduous," Sloane growls. Brenton Wexley looks up at her. He's weary. Lines of frustration have been permanently etched into his forehead. His cheeks are reddened by the blowing sands. Her own cheeks must be stung the same way. Her goggles are already caked with dust, too. And as she does every couple of minutes, she has to wipe them free with the backs of her hands. The two of them hang back beyond the dragging dais. Though Nima sleeps, they dare not say anything against her within easy earshot.
"Progress is progress," he says.
Ever the optimist. Surely by now it's just a show.
Our fates are married to the Hutts.
"It's been nearly a week."
"I know."
"We need to seize the moment."
"I've been thinking," she says.
A look of worry crosses his face.
"Do I want to know?"
"You do, and you will. And you'll not dismiss me. I have a plan."
"What is it?"
"The Hutt sleeps during the day, which means that is the time to strike. Soon, even. Today."
"Are you batty? Killing a Hutt is no easy thing."
"We're not attacking her."
"Who?
Her people?"
She sneers.
"Don't call them people. They're barely that anymore. They've been enslaved for so long, they've been programmed into something else."
But even as she says it, she hears the way it must sound to him. Brenton flinches, as if the words were almost physical, the back of a hand swinging for him.
"I don't mean it like that, Wexley. They're not like you."
"It's fine," he says, newly curt. "Let's not debate what makes us human."
"You want to attack the slaves, then?"
"We don't have weapons."
"They do. And I am a weapon. I'm trained. I can fight."
"We can't fight them all."
"I only need one or two. They have those wheel bikes. We take out the riders and steal the bikes. Those engines must have some power. We grab one and we go. Fast as we can."
"They'll come after us."
"I know. But what choice do we have?"
"We keep going. Same as we've been. Like you said, it's been nearly a week. Why change course now?"
She steps in front of him and blocks his path.
"Because I just thought of the plan."
It's a lie, and he calls her on it, his voice low as he does.
"The plan isn't even a plan. It's so obvious we could have done it from the beginning."
"No, what's changed is you're desperate.
hungry to have vindication, and you hate that it's delayed.
You don't feel the same way? You want your vengeance, too?
His face is suddenly stark with... What is that? Is it sadness? Sloane, it's not vengeance I want.
Don't lie. If it's not vengeance, then what? What drives you to be out here in this hell-blasted deadland?
She leans in close and lifts her goggles so she can stare at him with her cold, dark eyes.
Rage flares up in her at the thought he does not share her desire for comeuppance. You mean to tell me you don't want to put a blaster to Gallius Rax's forehead? I do. Stars help me, I do. But that's not why I'm here. I want to make up for what I did.
It's so absurd an idea. Sloane can't help but bark an incredulous laugh.
Make up for what? Chandrilla? Someone stuck a chip in your head, Brenton. You were dancing on the end of Rax's puppet strings. We all were. You don't have to own that. You can just cut his strings because it feels good to cut his damn strings.
I need to stop Rax because it's how I show my wife and my son that I'm not the man on that stage. It's how I fix what I did. Sloane grabs a fistful of his shirt.
You're a fool. It's vengeance that carries us. Forget everyone else.
He pauses. The sadness on his face deepens. The look he gives her is one of pity. You don't have anybody, do you? That's why you don't understand. There's nobody out there who you love, or who loves you back. Those words are like a blaster shot to her middle, clean through, leaving a hole as big as a fist. He keeps going. You have to have something or someone to fight for. Not just this. Not just revenge.
I have what I have.
You have the Empire. You can save it.
This is rich. The Rebel telling me how to save my Empire. My Empire? It's dead. It died the moment it touched this planet. The only thing I have, and the only thing I need, is the look on Rax's face as I take it all away.
She looks over her shoulder at the caravan. Already their lagging is being noticed by the bone-faced acolytes.
I'm retaking control of this situation. You can come with me, or you can die a hut slave.
And with that, she turns and marches back to the caravan. Sloane is singularly focused. Ahead, the slaves on wheelbikes do loops in and around the caravan, the caesium fuel burning black out their tailpipes. She storms up alongside the dais, calculating her path of attack. One hut slave walks in front of her. He's one of the few with a blaster, a rifle cradled in some creature's ribcage, the barrel framed by a pair of broken tusks. One punch, and she'll have that blaster. That will draw attention. She'll need to run and gun. But that'll time out right. The one on the fat-bellied wheel bike doing loops will be within range. Take him out, grab the bike. It'll be like that time on Yan Corelda, when she was just a recruit in the Empire and barely got away from a gang of rebel thugs after refueling her speeder bike. One of their blaster bolts literally cooked a tuft of her hair. She could smell it burning for hours after. She charges forward, past the dais, past a duo of hut slaves who babble at her as she pushes onward. Sloane has no idea where Brenton is, if he's hot on her heels or burying his head in the sand. She doesn't care. She can't care. Her goal is the blaster rifle, then the wheel bike, then Rax. The hut slave doesn't even know to suspect her. By the time she's upon him and he's turning his head toward her, she drives a fist into the back of his skull. His teeth snap together, and he doesn't even make a sound. All he does is pitch forward, face planting into the sand. And as he does, she catches his blaster and wrenches it out of his grip. Now she has a weapon. Nima didn't let her or Brenton have blasters. On this journey, they've been nothing but spectators,
buckled into a ride they didn't ask to take. That changes now.
But the wheel bike that had been coming her way suddenly kicks up a spray of sand and goes back the other way, its engine growling.
No! Get back here, you hot-sucking freak!
She starts to run, but now cries of alarm rise up around her. Nima's slaves howling and calling for their mistress. And the hut does not disappoint.
Sloane hears the mechanical gargle of the slug's translator box as it transmits her rage to the world.
Stop her!
It all happens so fast. One slave comes up at her, and she cracks the butt end of the blaster rifle into his chin. He swallows teeth and goes down, flailing, and two more come charging up in his place.
Sloane raises the rifle, aims. Two spears of laser light end them as she fires the blaster. Each slave goes down with a smoking hole in the center of his chest. Something clubs her in the side of the head. Her ears ring as she tumbles to the sand, rolling over and reflexively holding up the blaster across her face just as a slave brings his sharpened machete down. The blade sticks into the side of the rifle. The slave struggles to extract it. Someone tackles the slave from behind, knocking him back.
Brenton.
Wexley kicks at the freak with a boot, then grabs the machete with one hand and helps Sloane up with the other. As he hauls her to standing, Sloane hears a sound. The hissing of sand. The chanting of the slaves. And it's then she knows that something is coming. Nima. If Sloane has maintained one common belief about huts, it's that they are indolent, lethargic creatures. They are called slugs for a reason. But Nima defies this handily. This creature is not some torpid glob. Sloane looks back over Brenton's shoulder, and fear fills her empty spaces the way fire gobbles air. The hut slams down off her dais, hitting the sand with a cough of dust. Nima slithers toward them, fast as a viper. Hut slaves cling to her like riders, their mouths open, their teeth bared. They have blasters. They start firing. Sloane grabs Brenton's arm, and they break into a hard run. Blaster bolts kick up sand around their feet.
Behind them, the hissing sound of Nima's body sliding across the sand grows louder and closer. She has no idea how near the hut is to them, but it's close enough that Sloane starts to smell the foul stink of the monster.
She thinks to turn behind her and fire into the serpent's face, but the slaves will just swarm her. No, the plan is the plan, and she needs to stick with it.
Get to the wheeled bikes!
She takes aim as she runs, tracking one of the riders with the sights of her rifle. But something distracts her. In the distance, far away in the valley, she spies a flash of light. Something glinting off the high day sun. The hut roars behind her. A shadow falls upon her as Nima rises up, lifting her whole corpulent body with the sheer strength and will of her tail. The air fills with white light. A shrieking pillar of green fire fills the space. And before Sloane even knows what's happening, there's a thunderclap, and she's thrown to the ground. A column of smoke drifts from somewhere, and her eyes follow it to the source. Nima's hover dais is collapsed into the sand, sheared in half. The hot mistress herself is within spitting distance. The slug is dazed, tilting toward her side. Nima shakes her head as her reptilian eyes refocus. Sand streams from her crumpled, rotten skull. The hut bellows something in proto-Huttese, but the translation is lost to another bolt piercing the air, and one of the wheel cars suddenly flips up, turning once, twice, before slamming back down on top of one of the beasts. The creature screams as its back snaps. Turbo lasers. That's what's firing on them. Sloane knows that sound, that beam. She's never been on the ground when they've been firing, and she's never been the one in their sights. But she knows what they can do. And if they don't move, they're all dead. Change of plans. The wheel bike won't save her. But those plateaus? They might. She reaches down to find her one ally in all this. Sloane looks over and sees that half of Brenton Wexley is missing. Oh no. But then he sits up, sand and dust seeming to melt off him. Somehow a wave of it buried part of him. He coughs and hacks, but there's no time for him to clear his lungs. So Sloane gets behind him and helps him stand. She points. The plateaus! Run! They run. Just as another turbo laser blast turns one of the wheel bikes to ash.